And human gametes are such that, you know, they can rectify their problems automatically at an young age. Even if there is a sperm problem, if the egg is very healthy and young, then it gets rectified. It rectifies the problem of the sperm. Even if the male has a problem, it gets rectified. When you eat food from a plastic container, which is hot, the food, if it is hot, it produces some chemicals which act on the ovaries, and it reduces the ovarian reserve slowly. So in the same way, the sperm can also get affected. So the government is trying to regulate how the clinic works, who gives the treatment to the patient, what is the experience that is needed. Like according to this law, at least 3 years of training should be there at the super specialty level before they are able to independently treat the patient.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Fertility Tales powered by Nova IVF. I'm your host Simrat, and today we are delving deep into the evolving legal landscape of fertility treatment in India with a very special guest, Dr. Lakshmi Chirumamila. Dr. Lakshmi is the National Strategy Director and Senior Clinical Director of Nova IVF and practices in Banjara Hills and LB Nagar, Hyderabad. A distinguished fertility specialist with over 20 years of experience in the fertility field, she's played a pivotal role in the journey of thousands of couples towards parenthood, both in India and abroad, specializing in various complex fertility issues. Dr. Lakshmi, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
Let's start at the very beginning. What drew you to medicine in the first place, and how did you choose fertility as a specialization?
My father is a doctor. Maybe that was the initial inspiration.
Of course.
But later, you know, previously when we were kids, the medical field is not so advanced. Lot of deaths because of lack of facilities, right. Lack of appropriate doctors. So maybe that has inspired me to become a doctor initially.
All right.
Yeah, so that's how I think. And then I had my grandmom passed away because of heart attack. Mm-hmm. So that was also one of the inspirations.
All right, so that left an impact on you.
Impact on me. So thought, okay, better I help people in regards to health. And so that's how I got the inspiration to become a doctor.
How inspiring. And what about fertility specialization? How did you get about into that?
So initially, I thought I would become a cardiologist. But it was a 360 degrees change after I started my internship in gynec.
Okay.
So a lot of deliveries used to happen, a lot of mothers with a lot of problems. So every day it's a new challenge in gynec. So I thought, okay, this is a field, you know, I can practice both medicine and surgery, both in one specialty, that is gynec.
Okay.
And then obstetrics is a challenge every day. Every patient is a new scenario. So that's how I started interest in gynec and took gynec field. Mm-hmm. I did my post-graduation in gynecology. Later, when I moved to UK, then slowly these advances in infertility, the rapid growing field, mm-hmm. so attracted me a lot. So initially, I did a research fellowship in infertility.
Okay.
And finally, I thought, okay, this is the way forward for me.
On all, it's inspired you into fertility and fertility specialization.
So it's a new developing field with a lot of challenges, where the success is very low, lot of humiliation, especially in our society.
True.
So we can help lot of patients build their families and also overcome their humility and desperation that they have.
That's true.
To have a child.
That's true.
So I think once they know that they're pregnant, the happiness that we see in their faces, that makes your day.
That makes your day.
Yeah. So that, I think that's how.
That's truly inspiring, Doctor. Your story of how you took inspiration from these stories. Could you describe the landscape a decade ago of fertility treatments, the prevalence, the treatment, the accessibility? What was it like?
Okay, when we started, like 10 years back means almost like in 2010. Mm-hmm. So just then in India, the fertility treatments have just started cropping up. Few clinics here and there. First, it started in Mumbai, and then slowly it started coming back to Hyderabad. And the prevalence, when you say, it is there. Lot of infertility problems were there even in the past, but it is increasing day by day now, mainly because of the changing social scenarios. Previously in India, we used to have marriages at an young age, like by 18-20 girls would get married.
Right.
Even 18-20 is a late age, I would say. Right. Even earlier they would get married and they would have kids and finish their family by the age of 20-22. So by the time even they know that they have a problem, they would conceive and deliver. Mm-hmm. And human gametes are such that, you know, they can rectify their problems automatically at an young age. Even if there is a sperm problem, if the egg is very healthy and young, then it gets rectified. It rectifies the problem of the sperm. Even if the male has a problem, it gets rectified.
Okay.
So naturally, we wouldn't see that much of a problem. But as the age increases, the egg becomes more resilient. So it doesn't have the capacity to rectify. So age plays an important role. So with increasing age at marriage, mm-hmm. delaying family planning, all this leads to further more problems. Because as I have said, age has an impact mm-hmm. on the fertility of the woman, on the fertility of the male also. Along with the impact of the age, there is increasing incidence of other gynecological problems with increasing age of the woman, like endometriosis, mm-hmm. Like adenomyosis, which is when we were postgraduates, we never had these problems. We never saw these problems so rampantly mm-hmm. in our women. But with changing social and environmental scenarios, all these problems have started cropping up even in our Indian scenario. So all these increase the risk of infertility. And at that time, the approachability to the clinics is very less. They only used to go to gynecologists for treatment. Mm-hmm. But now we have infertility clinic in every road. So
it's the approachability,
yeah. So the approachability is more, the experience, the expertise is more. So more and more patients want to avail this treatment. And also the affordability also increased.
Right.
Previously, the affordability was less. Only few percentage of people could go to the particular specialist clinic to get the treatment. But now everyone is putting their efforts to go and take the treatment. And also the advances are so much, though it is only a 30 or 40 year old specialty, but the treatments and advances are jumping up in leaps and bounds.
That's true.
Whether we have that, what do you say, the evidence base that saying that this particular treatment is useful for this particular patient, but the advances, whatever comes in, we have it in India and we start giving it to the patients. Sometimes it is useful, sometimes not.
It's a trial and error.
It is a trial and error, especially in fertility.
So the changing landscape, fertility problems, prevalence, awareness, and also I feel lifestyle and stress.
Yeah, definitely. Lifestyle and stress and environmental factors.
Plays a big role.
And also I want to emphasize on the estrogen mimicking molecules that are present in the environment nowadays.
Do tell me about what is it about?
These are present everywhere. They are present in your nail polishes, in your makeup kits. You name it, it is there. Even shaving creams.
Okay.
So plastics. So what these do is they mimic the estrogen hormone. So when you eat food from a plastic container, which is hot, the mm-hmm. food, if it is hot, it produces some chemicals which acts on the ovaries and it reduces the ovarian reserve slowly. So in the same way, the sperm can also get affected.
Okay.
So this also is playing a major role. That is the reason why maybe more and more women are having this premature ovarian failure or low sperm count in males.
That's a big environmental factor and lifestyle.
Exactly.
Change.
So even the cups we use for coffee and tea, mm-hmm. they are also like detrimental in terms of reproductive health of the population. unknowingly we use all these in day in and day out, yeah, because they're more comfortable to use and easy access and comfortable to use and throw.
Yeah.
But the impact they create on our general health and reproductive health is huge. So this awareness should be brought in the regular society.
That's true. I mean, I'm sure listeners must be really alarmed.
Yes. You know, we talk about pollution, but we don't talk about these minute things.
Makes a lot of difference.
It doesn't happen in a day. Over a period of time, it creates a lot of impact.
Doctor, you mentioned something about environmental factors. Could you talk a little bit about this for our listeners to understand what effect it could have on their fertility?
So there are certain papers which have come up to say that, you know, even water in the plastic containers like bottles,
mm-hmm,
when it is left outside in warm environment and then utilized, that can cause reactions in the plastic, which can impact the reproductive health. It's not only reproductive health, it can impact the other general body health also, and it could be one of the causes of cancer as well.
I've heard breast cancer is one of the reasons.
Yeah. So even for that matter, endometriosis.
Oh.
So these plastics could be the reason why endometriosis prevalence is increasing. Previously, when we were in post-graduation, we used to say, okay, endometriosis is very common in Western countries.
Mm.
But now we see the same in our society. So it can cause endometriosis, adenomyosis. Adenomyosis used to be more common in women of 40 years or beyond. But now we see a lot of patients in their 20s and 30s having adenomyosis.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, you know, mainly because of use of these chemicals, or we call them as endocrine disruptive chemicals.
Endocrine disruptive chemicals, all right.
So they can cause a lot of impact on the reproductive health and also on general health.
And taking examples from our regular day-to-day life, what suggestions would you give?
So minimal use of any type of cosmetics for females, even lipsticks, creams, all natural products should be used, even cleaning products, what you use to clean your homes or toilets, they also should be more like natural products near to nature than the products what has chemicals in it. Like the toilet cleaners and all, that they also can impact the general health. So minimal use of chemicals as far as possible. Even for that matter, the pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in farmers, the sperm counts are very low. We happen to see that. And even the egg quality. We usually start for the treatment in a couple from a farming background,
mm-hmm,
just because the husband's sperm is less. But once we start doing IVF, sometimes we come to realize that the egg quality is even worse than the sperm.
Oh, so in the rural
population, the impact could be because of pesticides. Though they are away from this pollution, but pesticides also can cause fertility issues.
Doctor, you mentioned pesticides. The use of pesticides is inevitable and we consume them through food and vegetables. But how else does this affect us? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
We should make sure that we eat minimal pesticide when we are taking our food. So we can avoid eating pesticides,
mm-hmm,
either by going organic completely or by cleaning the products before we eat, especially the fruits.
Mm-hmm.
So there are various ways how we can get rid of the pesticides before we eat, like putting salt or put the bleach in water and soaking them for some time before we eat.
Okay.
So that is how we can reduce the intake of pesticides. If we are in the farming areas, we can even inhale the pesticides.
Oh.
Okay. So while you are spraying the pesticide onto the farm, people can inhale. So that can also impact. That gets absorbed into the blood. In the same way from the skin. So what we advise them is to keep away from the pesticides so that, you know, 2-3 months maybe it will help improve their sperm count or egg quality.
Okay.
Every attempt should be made to reduce the exposure to pesticide and reduce the intake of pesticide into our body.
And that does help.
That does help. So how we can do that is to avoid completely to go for completely organic foods where pesticides are not utilized.
That's a note to everybody to listen for the general health as well.
Doctor,
on to a very hot topic that's being debated recently, the Assisted Reproductive Technology and Surrogacy Law, an act. What does it mean for a patient and what are the benefits of this law? Could you explain to the listeners?
This is one important thing that happened in this reproductive treatment, medicine treatment in for the patients who are having infertility problems. Previously, this is a fast-growing branch and there was no regulation like in India or in most of the countries across the world. So with this law, it becomes regulated. So the patients are the focus of this law, and the government wants the patients to be treated in a most effective way without being compromised at any point, be it in the type of treatment they're offered and also the end result of the treatment. And in this treatment, we use donors and we use surrogates. So the main aim of the government is to safeguard the well-being of these donors and also the surrogates. And the byproduct is the child. So the welfare of the child is also very important, which has been neglected before. So they want to safeguard the children also who are born out of this treatment.
All right.
So that is the main thing.
All right. And what are the benefits to the patients from this act?
So the government is trying to regulate how the clinic works, who gives the treatment to the patient. What is the experience that is needed? Like according to this law, at least 3 years of training should be there at the super specialty level before they are able to independently treat the patient.
Okay.
And coming to the embryologist, the embryologist should be trained. They have to have a specified qualification before they start actually working on the gametes. And the place where they undergo treatment, which is the clinic, should have registered with the law, with the appropriate authority that is there in the state, so that the state would know whether the patient would know whether the clinic is registered under this authority or not, and they can comfortably go to that place where the treatments are monitored by the regulatory authority at the state level. And the law also specifies that the treatments that are being done in the clinic should be monitored by the authority.
Okay.
So the success rates or the way the treatments are being done, the amount of medications given to the patients or the donors, everything is regulated now.
Okay, with all these regulations that...
The patient can be confident that, they will get the right type of treatment.
And transparent treatment.
Transparent treatment, yes.
I think this came from the fact that there were so many IVF clinics just cropping about in the whole country. So this regulation, I feel, was very important.
Yeah. Previously, every gynecologist has the capacity to do the treatments or do IUI cycles for that matter. But now the law says that all the gynecologists who want to do IUI treatment, they have to be registered with the law, with the authority. Without that, they can't do IUI cycles.
Right.
And previously, they used to get the IUI sample prepared in the lab, and then the sample used to be transported to the clinic where the IUI will be done.
Right.
But with this law, the transportation of the gametes is completely stopped.
Okay.
So, transportation reduces the capacity of the sperm for fertilization.
Okay.
So in that way, the success can be improved. All these points have been taken into consideration, and this also helps the patient to get a better treatment.
It's clear that these regulations are a very big step forward. But what are the standards that the Act dictates for a clinic and its infrastructure?
So previously, wherever there is a small room vacant, they used to set up an embryology lab.
Oh.
So now it shouldn't be a room, but it should be a well-controlled environment where the temperature, humidity, and everything is maintained. The particles also should be regulated, the amount of, the number of particles that are present. So similar to where the pharma conducts their research, In the same way, the embryology lab also should have certain standards to be maintained.
Okay.
And this is necessary because embryos are very sensitive to temperature or humidity. Every degree change in temperature changes the quality of the embryos that we get.
Mm.
And the quality of the embryos that we get impact the success of the treatment. So all this change in the infrastructure that the stipulations they have given for the clinics to be maintained helps in improving the success of the treatment.
Okay.
In the same way, they have maintained that the lab should have laminar flow equipment,
okay,
or the ICSI machines. Everything should be available, readily available in the center. And also the embryologist who is there should also be in-house.
Mm.
That was a prerequisite. Previously, embryologists used to move around the whole
consultants.
The city. Yeah.
Okay.
They used to roam around the whole city, jumping from one place to the other. By doing so, they won't have the concentration or the
on one patient
or one clinic. Or sometimes they do batch IVFs where they collate all the patients and then do IVF in one sitting, like 2-3 days, they do the IVF, finish it off.
Oh.
So by doing so, what happens, the lab will be left behind for 10 days or 15 days without any regulation, maintenance.
Mm.
And the embryologist will just come in, do this procedure for 3 days, and he will move into the other clinic. So all this will reduce the success rates. So to avoid this, the law has maintained that, you know, the embryologist should be in-house. That is also one important change.
ART does bring in that factor for regulating all these clinics and regulations with all these regulations. A welcome step, I'm sure. Doctor, regarding the manpower and expertise required in an ART clinic, what are the mandatory criteria?
So the law says that we should have a gynecologist,
mm-hmm,
who has experience or training in the subspecialty of reproductive medicine. So the experience needed is at least 3 years of experience, either a fellowship or working in a place where they have the IVF facilities.
Okay.
And they should also be should have an experience of doing 50 pickups, oocyte retrievals. That is also mandatory.
Okay.
And they also suggest that the clinic should have an andrologist, an anesthetist, and then an embryologist who is experienced and who is well trained for 3 years. One is on site and 2 years is in an embryology lab. So these are the main requirements. They also say we should have a counselor, psychological counselor, mm-hmm, because all these patients are so stressed. You know, the counselor would help them understand more of what is happening and the psychological issues they are facing and how to overcome that. So that is also very important.
Very true.
And they also mention of having a director who will take care of the administration part of the clinic. So they have taken into consideration all aspects.
Overall aspect for the whole clinic.
Both running of the clinic, yeah.
It's important for our listeners also to know when they choose an IVF clinic where they could also see and understand that these are the things they should be looking out for in their core team and their supporting team. That's very interesting. Consent before starting treatment is very crucial. What do couples need to know about this?
Consent is nothing but understanding what they are going through, what treatment they are being offered, what are the alternatives they have, and what is the best for them. So if you look at fertility treatments, when a patient comes, especially with unexplained infertility, we tend to explain to them, if they try naturally, what is the success rate, what are the advantages and disadvantages, if they go for IUI, what are the advantages and what is the success rate, and in the same way IVF. So they will understand the whole scenario and they will come to a conclusion, this is the right way for us to go. So that is called informed consent. So the law says specifically that the patient should be given the informed consent, and counseling should be done in detail about both the pros and cons, advantages and disadvantages of the treatment and also adoption.
Mm.
And then we have to leave it for the patient to understand and decide finally.
Okay.
And both wife and husband should be there and they both have to give the consent.
Okay.
And this is more so crucial in case of using donor sperms or donor eggs. Because sometimes couples, these people come and say, okay, don't tell my husband, don't tell my wife. So this is not at all acceptable. Even in previous guidelines or from the in the present law, this is not at all acceptable. Both the wife and husband should be there, give informed consent, and then only we have to do the treatment.
Because they should know that they are stepping into this. Okay.
And it is more important when they are using donor gametes, because this is a lifetime challenge there that they are stepping into.
Yes.
And if there is any discrepancy, then it is going to be a big problem for them throughout the life.
And so that they make an informed decision about this lifestyle.
And they should accept the child. Once the child is born. So the welfare of the child also comes into play.
Got
so
it.
That is why both the parents have to accept.
Got it.
Before they start the treatment.
There's a lot of curiosity about embryo transfer. Could you tell us a little bit about that? How many embryos can be transferred, and is there a cap to it? And if there is, why?
Usually the trend is like the more embryos you put, the better the success rate is.
Because ratio.
The proportion, the chances increase proportionately. But the side effects also increase in the same way.
Okay.
And the chance of pregnancy, the proportionate chance of pregnancy that is increased is less when compared to the risks that are increasing beyond the three embryos. That is why the law says that beyond three embryos, we shouldn't transfer. And the Western world is going towards single embryo transfer. Because the measure of success of any IVF treatment is considered to be one single healthy baby. That is what we should aim for. So that is why we are trying to reduce the number of embryos transferred.
Okay.
Though the number of attempts might be more, but if we reduce the number of embryos, the risk for the mother and the baby will be less. So always twins or more than that, the triplets, are highly risky pregnancies.
Okay.
So the risk of any problem during pregnancy, like be it be diabetes during pregnancy or hypertension during pregnancy, almost doubles or triples if the lady is having twins or triplets.
Got it.
And the risk of miscarriage, risk of preterm delivery, neurological impact on the baby, high UGR, everything gets doubled or tripled. So to reduce all those problems for both the baby and the mother, we tend to try to reduce the number of embryo transfer, a number of embryos that we transfer per embryo transfer.
Okay.
And we can confidently go down to two or one if the success rate of our lab is better, if our embryo quality is good. So that's why the law says you should have a better quality lab and better quality embryos and reduce the number of embryo transfers.
And what is the cap in India?
India is three.
Three.
Three, not more than three. But at Nova, we are going towards one.
That's
mainly because of the better labs, best labs we have.
Okay.
The embryo quality that we have and the implantation rates are very good. So our aim is that our implantation rate is around 30 to 40%.
Okay. So you mean to say that it's not the number of eggs that transferred, it's more number of embryos transferred, but the quality of lab that determines success.
So when your lab is not efficient, then you have to transfer more embryos to get a better success rate. When your lab is efficient, you, even with one or two embryos, you will have a good success and less complications. So any patient who wants to embark onto this treatment should aim to have less number of embryos transferred. More. Better so if it is one at a time.
That speaks volumes about the clinic and the lab.
Yeah.
One concerns that couples do have is about mixing of gametes. How do we avoid that?
As humans are not foolproof, this technology has come up in this RFID system. If there is any problem, suddenly the alarm will go off, will get triggered, and we will identify the problem and then avoid the problem by rechecking what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, the mixing up of gametes will not happen. And the embryologist will take the extra precaution to see what has gone wrong. And he will correct himself so that the actual mixing doesn't happen.
So no mixing is possible?
No mixing is possible. So this
Alrighty.
Technology is 100% foolproof.
Okay.
So and the patients can be rest assured that this will not happen at Nova.
Genetic testing plays a very important role in IVF. What is it and when do you suggest it is done?
Genetic testing means we check the embryos after doing IVF, whether that particular embryo has any genetic problem, either a chromosome problem or a gene problem. If the family has a genetic disease which runs in the form of genes, then we tend to identify the gene and avoid that embryo which has a genetic problem in terms of genes. If you are looking at chromosome problems, patients who are more than 35 years, especially women, they tend to have a lot of chromosome problems like Down syndrome babies or Edwards syndrome like that because of the chromosome abnormalities that we see in the eggs. So this we can identify, this also we can identify by doing the genetic test on the embryo, chromosome test. This is called PGTA, aneuploidy screening. And if there is translocations in the chromosomes also we can identify, especially when parents have translocation of chromosomes, they have increased risk of miscarriages. They have 8-9 miscarriages, still they won't have a baby. So we can identify that translocation in the chromosomes in the embryo and transfer only the healthy embryo.
Got it.
So in this way, we can avoid miscarriages, we can have a healthy lineage in the family, and we can avoid also abnormalities like Down syndrome or Edwards syndrome in the children.
In cases where donors are required and are advised for a couple, how does the couple go about sourcing these donors? Does the clinic provide any guidance?
So previously, we used to procure the donors. But now the law says that it should be through a donor bank. So whenever there is a need, we tend to guide them towards the donor bank. And there they can find out what are the requirements they have and what type of donors they need. And in terms of egg donor, they will send us the donor and we stimulate and harvest the eggs. But in terms of sperm donor, they will have the sperm, which semen freezing, frozen sperm. And once they select the sperm, they will ship that container to us.
Okay.
So we use that specific container for that specific couple only. We can't store the sperm, donor sperm, in our premises.
Okay.
So that is the requirement the law makes. So it is through donor bank.
All right.
We can't recruit donors from our side.
So doctor, when a couple does go to a donor bank, do they have the choice of looking at certain physical or criteria to look for a donor for their offspring?
Yeah, I mean, there are different types of criteria each will give importance to. It all depends on their individual priorities. So color, height, hair texture, education, even the community they come from.
Oh,
one of the rarest of the asks was, if they come from a very business background community, so that, you know, they will have highly intellectual.
That's also something that they can decide with the donor. Okay.
So that choice they have still.
Okay.
But mainly most of the couples will ask for a healthy baby, healthy background, family background.
At the end, that's what matters, a healthy baby. Doctor, what are the age criteria for donors and how does the law protect or have safety measures in place for these donors?
Coming to the donor should be married, should have a baby of her own. And then only we can recruit her. And then the age criteria is 23 to 35 years for the egg donor. For the sperm donor, it is again 23 to 51. But the younger, the better. Even males can transmit diseases at a later age. So the donors should be a bit younger, even in terms of male donors, male sperm donors. And coming to the screening, both the donors will be looked at in regards to their general health, family health, in terms of any diseases running in the family, and then any sexually transmitted diseases. We do even test for that. In terms of sperm donor, we freeze the sperm and recheck for the communicable diseases like sexually transmitted diseases like HIV, hepatitis B, again after 6 months.
Okay.
Make sure that the donor is free of all this and then only release the sperm.
Okay.
But for egg donors, we are not doing that. But we again check for the general health, family history, any communicable, transmittable diseases. And then we check for thalassemias. We check for the general health, like creatinine, LFTs and all those.
Okay.
And the sexually transmitted diseases. So whatever is preventable, we try to avoid all those problems. And then only we recruit that donor.
Can couples' embryos or gametes be transported to another city or maybe abroad? Is that even possible?
Previously, we used to transport gametes between the clinics, between the cities.
Okay.
But now the ART law doesn't permit this.
Okay.
Even within the in the same organization, between two clinics, we can't transport. We need to get the permission of the authorities to transport the gametes also, be it be sperm or the egg. So that is a very strict law. Only if there is any need for the couple to transport, they should get the permission from the authority to transport the particular gametes.
This transportation or the regulation on transportation is put for the quality of the gametes or because of misuse of gametes?
Mostly misuse of gametes.
IVF for international patients has been big in the country. How has that changed after the ART law has been passed?
Okay, a lot of medical tourism happens in India and fertility treatment is one of that. Previously, we used to have a lot of surrogacy treatments, especially for international clients. But with this law, ART law and the surrogacy law, the surrogacy law completely avoids treatment for international patients. So that is a major change we are seeing now.
Okay.
But in terms of cell cycles, there is nothing different. Only restriction is on the age of the patients. So if anyone is foreigner and if they are beyond 55 in terms of male, and if the female is more than 50, we can't treat her. Otherwise, everything else is the same as before.
So nothing much has changed for even a couple who is one from abroad and trying to have a baby in.
As long as they are trying for a self-cycle.
With the ART law in its full swing, how do you think it has reshaped the IVF industry in the country?
The main aim is that we deliver the best of the treatments to the patients with no exploitation of the donors and surrogates, and with the welfare of the child in consideration in the context while treating the patient. And the patient should be informed, and an informed consent should be taken with appropriate counseling. So if all this happens, then we are in the best of the world and with the best success rates to our patients.
You've been a guiding light to so many in the field of fertility. What would be your word of advice for people who are looking to start their career in fertility or clinicians? What would be your advice to them?
So first important thing is they should gain enough knowledge, enough experience in gynecology. Second, they should have enough training exposure in the field of infertility, especially with the law in place. The law requires 3 years of experience in an infertility clinic. So that is very essential. My mentor used to say that there are no shortcuts. No shortcuts in life, but more so in infertility field. So appropriate training for 3 years will do them a lot of, will give them a lot of advantage or edge while practicing. And by doing so, they will be following the law and they will be able to give best treatment to their clients.
Doctor, in your lustrous career of 20 years, has there been a story or one story that has stood out in your lifetime? Please do tell us about that.
So there are a lot of stories like that, but one of it is one of my patients who is 38 years old, very poor ovarian reserve. She lost all her hope because reserve is very less. Everyone is like telling her that you won't be able to conceive. So at that point, okay, I offered her this natural cycle IVF in the initial stages of my career. And she got 2 oocytes. And luckily we got 2 embryos. and she has a baby now. I think the baby is also like around 10 years old.
How lovely.
So that was the best of everything, because you know, at 38 with two embryos, getting a baby in the first cycle is very rare. So, and she's one of the patients whom I always remember. Yeah.
How adorable. Stepping stones, I think. This was your, one of your first. Great to know, doctor. Thank you for being here today and taking us through this journey and informing us on such an important topic and other facets of fertility. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning into Fertility Tales. We hope today's episode has shed light on some of the complexities and advancements in fertility treatment and the law. Join us next time for more empowering stories and expert advice on your journey to parenthood. This is Simrat signing off from Fertility Tales powered by Nova IVF. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.